Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today let's talk about communication skills in life and in business. My friend and colleague, Meredith Bell, has been an entrepreneur since 1982, and she's an expert in helping companies develop the people side of their business. Meredith is the co-founder and president of Performance Support Systems, a global software system based in Virginia. Their award-winning assessment and development tools have been used by organizations of all types and sizes to help leaders and employees become more effective and perform. Meredith is the author or co-author of two books published in 2020, and I have both of them. Her solo book, Strong for Performance, Create a Culture with Learning and Development Programs at Stick, came out in March. Today we're going to be discussing her new book and the concepts that she provides in this book, and it's called Connect with Your Team, Mastering the Top 10 Communication Skills, which she co-authored with Denny Coates, her business partner of 30 years. And today Meredith is going to share again the concepts from this book. These are important, so write them down. Why communications are hard skills, not soft skills. What's required to master a skill. The characteristics of truly powerful listeners. Steps for receiving feedback graciously. I need help with that one. And finally, how to encourage someone really effectively. Meredith, welcome back to Your Partner in Success Radio.
Thank you, Denise. I'm very excited to be with you today. So much fun to talk with you again.
Oh, thank you. Listen, we're still having that same trouble I mentioned in the green room, my virtual green room a little bit ago. You're breaking up a bit, and I'm hearing a lot of background noise.
No. Shall I call in?
No, it's almost
too
late.
Shall I call on a different line?
It's actually almost too late to do that, I'm afraid. Let's just keep trying. Maybe get a little bit closer or move the microphone just a bit so it's not so close to your mouth, perhaps. I don't know. Let's try a few things because there's a lot of noise in the background, and you have so much to share. I want to make sure that people can hear you and they're not distracted.
Oh, thank you. Is that better?
No, it's not. You know what? Let's try this, Meredith. Go ahead and hang up and try to call back on another line. I'll just keep chatting while I wait for you. And if it doesn't work, then we'll just reschedule.
I'll call right back.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'll call right back.
Well, this is not working out very well, but you know what? It happens. The internet is a wonderful tool. We all love it, but there's always going to be, at some point during your day, something that isn't working perfectly. And if we can't get her back and if it's not going to work perfectly, I will get her to reschedule because this really is a very important conversation. So we'll just kind of hang on and see if she can come back. But anyway, I was talking about her books. Like I said, I do have both of them. She's back. That was quick. Let's see how that works. Okay, Meredith, can you hear me now?
I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me better?
Yes, you sound so much better. So I've just been chatting up a storm waiting for you. So.
Oh, great. Well, I'm so glad to be back with you and the connection is better.
Oh, it's much better. I'm going to tell everybody right now to just kind of ignore the first couple of minutes of the podcast because there are some distractions there, but here we are. So anyway, Meredith, welcome back. You've been here before. Tell people a bit about yourself that I may have missed in the original introduction.
Well, it has been quite the journey as an entrepreneur these last 30-some years. And one of the things that to me is unique about my business and my journey is that I've worked with my two business partners for the last 30 years. And you don't hear that very often anymore. And originally, as you mentioned in the introduction, my focus has been on those interpersonal skills all these years. And Denny and I used to be instructors and trainers, teaching people, leaders and members of teams, to be better communicators. And then we created products to help facilitate that. And we just decided last year, you know what, we need to put everything we know in the form of a book that can reach more people. And so that's what we've done with the book you were mentioning and that we're going to be talking about today, Connect with Your Team.
It's a terrific book. Anybody who listens to me knows that we've had back-to-back hurricanes here in Southwest Louisiana. Can't even talk. And they take a lot of time and a lot of energy trying to recover from them and clean up the messes. And it's, but I have to tell you, when the power went down for 3 weeks, it's going to be one of those days, Meredith, you may have to walk me through this, my own podcast, but for 3 days I had no power. And once I ran the power down on all of my two iPads, my phone, my neighbors were good enough to let me hook up to their generator and repower them. But I have a stack of books that I've been wanting to read. In fact, if you look at pictures of my office, when you go to yourpartnerandsuccessradio.com, there's an entire bookcase in there that is full of books from you guys, all of my guests. A lot of my guests are authors. And one of the books that I took my little stack and I was reading during those, 3 days without power was Connect with Your Team. So I have a question. One of the things that you say is communication skills are hard skills, not soft skills. That had me going, what? Because I have always considered communication to be a soft skill. So let's talk about that, because that really had me going, oh,
yes.
Interesting.
Well, there are a couple of reasons that I say that. And one is there tends to be an attitude in organizations sometimes when you use the word soft skills. Oh, we already know those, or, we've already had training on that. And the fact is, being able to interact with other people effectively is one of the most, it is the most critical skill. When you think about why people leave organizations, more often than any other reason given, it's because of their boss. And a lot of that has to do with how the boss communicates with them. Their manager may or may not have very good interpersonal skills. So if these were really soft skills, which implies easy, everyone would do them well. But the fact is, they're hard because there are so many things that come into play, like our own previous programming, how we grew up, the family we grew up in, how did our parents communicate? Unfortunately, these skills are not taught in school, and so people do the best they can with what they've observed over the years, and unfortunately, we all tend to pick up bad habits along the way. And so working effectively with others in terms of communication ends up being one of the hardest things that we can do because we're all so different from each other.
And not only that, Meredith, but we communicate in different venues differently. I will email very differently than I speak. I will write very differently than I speak. So it's not just one area that we have to pay attention to. We have to figure out how we're communicating, who we're communicating to and with, and figure out how best to communicate with them directly is what I think you're saying.
Well, that's an excellent point because we are all really different. And if we communicate in a way that, suits us, let's say we want to get to the bottom line right away, and so we're looking for that from other people, and someone else needs to, tell a story first or explain more details, we can get impatient and send the message to them that, we're not happy about what they're doing or saying. So there are so many things that can get in the way. Another one is just our own ego. When somebody starts to share information with us, we can get defensive, we can react with anger. And that's why you know, one of the things I wanted to talk with you and your audience about today was how to receive feedback in a gracious way so that we, you know, encourage the person to be honest with us in the future too, and we don't shut it down.
Good point. One thing I've learned with my clients in particular is each client is unique. Each one is very, very unique. And for instance, I may have one client that he's brilliant. He's probably one of the smartest people I've ever met. He doesn't read past the first paragraph. So I have learned to write one sentence and bullet point it and make it very, very short and very sweet. So, and I go over it a couple of times, so there's no way for him to misunderstand it. He still manages it, but we're getting better about it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, and then the next step is like, I'll just pick up the phone and say, okay, you have a minute, let's figure this one out. So, you know, you have to, communication is not one thing for one person, and sometimes it's two or three steps is what I found.
Absolutely. And that's such a good point. I was laughing because I had somebody that worked with us years ago that was the same way. She didn't read paragraphs, so I would just do short numbered items. I have three things
works.
For you. One, two, three.
Right. And that makes it easier, you know, because very, very busy people, we don't have time. And I'm guilty of this too. Just give me what I need. Don't, you know, make it fluffy or floofy and don't ask me how I'm doing. I'm fine. If I'm answering, I'm still alive. We're good. Just give me what I need. And that's probably part of my personality. I just don't have time to, and I live in the deep South, Meredith. Everybody here, if you run into somebody, they want to, hey, how are you doing? How's your mom and them? They want to know what church you go to. They want to, and I have never been able to fall into that trap. I'm like, I'm great. How are you? Okay, got to go. Bye. It may be rude.
Yes.
But I don't have time or the energy. Plus, I'm an introvert. So it's like, I'm great. Got to go. See you later.
Mm-hmm.
And I find in communication that many people who are very busy, and most people I know are, we would like it if you were polite and you get to the point, you don't have to be all that charming. Seriously, you just don't. We don't care about your mom and them. We just don't care.
You know, what you're bringing up there is so important, and it ties in with this whole thing of noticing also when you are having a face-to-face interaction with someone or even over the phone. If you pick up that somebody is looking or sounding a bit impatient, you know, it's being aware of, how is that person receiving what I'm saying? And what is it they might need at this given moment? So we're not preoccupied with ourselves and what we want to say, but we're also paying attention to and being respectful of that other person.
Exactly. And that leads us back to one of the things that I listed at the top of the podcast is the characteristics of truly powerful listeners. I will often tell people, just shut up and listen. You want to be a good conversationalist? The best thing you can do is actually listen.
Well, you're right. In fact, to me, this is a couple of things. Listening is the foundation skill of so many other communication skills. But also, if you become a really powerful listener, you're going to set yourself apart just from doing that one thing, because most people are busy waiting for their turn to speak. And there's a real difference when you detect that someone, you know, has something they want to say to you. There are definitely some things that you can do to convey to them, you're really important to me right now. And of course, as you mentioned, we're all so busy, we're trying to multitask. And so one of the first things that can set you apart as a listener is simply to set aside anything else you might be doing, because we fool ourselves thinking, oh, I can listen to you while I'm cooking or while I'm, you know, typing this other thing, and you can't. It's just not possible to give your full attention to two different things. And so making that commitment, if this is somebody who matters to you, whether it's business or personal, then to just make that conscious choice that I'm going to tune in to you and listen carefully to what you have to say. without, you know, judging, evaluating, waiting for my turn to speak, and without being so eager to give advice or find a solution, because I think that can happen with us, especially those of us that, you know, want to be of help to others, that we sometimes listen for what's the problem so I can provide the solution or the answer. But sometimes people just want to be heard. They simply need to vent. And so it's important as an effective listener to just pay attention to what is this person trying to get at here, and making sure that, you know, we understand and sensing, you know, what kind of feelings are they expressing right now, so that I can show empathy if necessary to where they are, if they're struggling, if they're upset, to not downplay the emotion, but to acknowledge it and recognize the legitimacy of what it is they're saying. I think that's so key. Now, listening doesn't mean being silent, though, either, because yes, you are listening, but then you want to check in and clarify if you're getting the message. So you can simply say things like, so if I understand, you're upset because of this. Or if I'm hearing you correctly, this is what I'm getting. And it's not that you're repeating their words back exactly, but you're clarifying to make sure you're getting it. Because a huge need that everybody has is to be understood, to be heard. And if you can become really good at that, you convey such respect to that person and appreciating them in a way that few others do, you'll really stand out just from doing those simple things.
And you said more than two things that I was writing down this, but two things really stick with me. And one of the things was, stop what you're doing, pay attention, shut off everything. When I'm on a podcast or when I'm on a consulting call, I literally turn my phones off. If I'm on my office phone, my cell phone is off. Everything is off. I close off all tabs on my computers, mm-hmm. because otherwise they're going to pop up and go, hey, Denise, did you see this? Not now. So I've had to teach myself to just absolutely shut off all distractions and pay absolute attention to who I'm speaking to. And you know how I learned that? It was one of those things that you just mentioned. I was having a consultation with a client, and all I could hear was typing, 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 typing. Mm-hmm. And I finally said, am I disturbing you? I mean, I had had it. Am I disturbing you? She said, oh, I'm sorry. I'm doing this, that, and the other. I said, here's what we're going to do. You let me know when you have time to finish this conversation when it's just us. And I hung up. And that was the end of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, the next time we had, and she was a terrific client. And, you know, the next time she said, I'm really sorry, I didn't realize I was doing it. That was the crux of the matter. She was multitasking. Mm-hmm. She didn't know she was annoying the bejeebers out of me and effectively telling me that I didn't matter, which is really what it was. And once she said, oh, I'm so sorry, she didn't know. Well, now she knows.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it takes, you know, sometimes people, Denise, won't be as direct as you were. They'll just sit there and kind of
I don't have any
over it.
True. But you know me, I don't have any filters. So when I've had enough, you know about it.
Well, and that's the thing. People, you know, need to be honest with each other. If they feel they're not being understood, they're not being heard, to be able to express that and say, you're not getting what I'm saying. And so rather than, you know, getting defensive, the other person needs to do, you know, a check of themselves to see, all right, how am I not getting this? What am I? And a lot of times, Denise, it goes back to our history with that person. You know, if we have judged them to be a certain kind of person or somebody we've disagreed with in the past, we can come to that conversation ready to defend ourselves or to jump on them and prove they're wrong. And it just gets in the way of understanding what what this person really needs to say. And I'll give you an example of this woman who was using one of our programs to improve the way she listened to others. And she tended to have these categories of people that, you know, she classified as complainers or, you know, other ways. And this one individual in particular, she tended to brush off, not listen to her, and it just, you know, push her out of the office as quickly as she could. And so since she was working on being a better listener, she decided to take a different approach. This person was coming to her with a concern about something that was happening on the team. And so, and it related to a decision that this manager had made previously. So she kept an open mind, and she asked this, it was a supervisor that was coming to her, asking her about this particular situation. So the manager listened to her and asked questions to make sure she was really getting what the person was saying, and she ended up changing her mind about the decision that she had made, which shocked the heck out of this particular supervisor who had felt brushed aside, you know, and kind of discounted in the past. But it went a step further. This manager went out and talked to other members of the team and let them know. Well, first she asked them, you know, about their perceptions of this particular situation. They expressed similar concerns to this, the first supervisor. And so this manager announced to all of them, you know, that she was going to change her mind about this particular decision based on the input she got. And that had, that one situation had a huge impact on the whole team because she demonstrated that she really was willing not just to listen, but to be open to considering other opinions besides her own. And she slowed down long enough because the other thing that was holding her back was she tended to move fast. So she would brush people off and just feel like she had to decide, you know, on a certain thing quickly without thinking through what impact this might have on others. So we learn things when we slow down long enough to listen to someone else and really try to understand their perspective. And I think that's huge for, you know, improving the way we communicate with others.
Absolutely. And being part of a team, T-E-A-M, means that you're not the only person. You do have to communicate with others. You do have to listen. You should want to listen. And even if you don't change your mind, at least you have a valid reason for not changing your mind. But you can't just, in my opinion, you can't just run around and go, okay, we're going to do this and this and this and everybody go do. That's a really good way to have people hate you.
Yes. And the other thing that a really good listener will do is ask open-ended questions to get more information. So open-ended means, of course, asking questions that don't end with yes or no or, you know, simple one-word answer, but instead really show an interest in exploring further what is it about this situation the person needs to talk about more. Because the one of the best gifts we can give others, whether it's being a parent or being, you know, a coworker on a team or a manager, is helping people, you know, figure things out for themselves so that they improve the way they think through things and can become more self-reliant and more confident in their ability to make decisions. And I think for folks on a team, if you find that others are constantly coming to you before they feel okay about, you know, making a decision and moving on, it's a good time to stop and think about, what am I doing that seems to be sending the message that you've got to check with me first before you can decide anything on your own?
That's a good question. And it happens a lot because, I mean, let's face it, we were taught from high school, college on that the boss was the boss. And we didn't really understand in, you know, some years ago, the concept of teams. We clocked in, we clocked out. Of course, that's not even true anymore, but that mindset, I have noticed, tends to kind of linger. So this mm-hmm. is why this is an important conversation, because we are talking about teams, we are talking about connection, and we're talking about communication skills, which of necessity have to change. They have to, especially with people working remotely these days. You can't mm-hmm. look at anybody. I mean, if you look at me and I'm irritated with you, you're going to see my right eyebrow go up. There's no mistaking what I'm thinking. None. You know what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. We don't mm-hmm. have that when we're working remotely. We don't have those water cooler chats. We don't have, you know, it's hard to really read empathy in an email. It's much easier to hear what somebody is saying if you're actually chatting with them. So there are so mm-hmm. many things that are going on right now that are, I think, fairly new and very important that we really need to be delving in.
That's really true. And, you know, when you were talking before about talking to that one client, one of the things that I do when I'm on a phone call is I will close my eyes when I'm listening to the other person so that I don't get distracted by what's on my desk or what's on my monitor, you know, right in front of me. Because I have seen with myself, even just glancing and reading a sentence or two of something that's in front of me, I miss what that person was saying. And so if I close my eyes, then that means the only thing I'm concentrating on is what that person is saying to me, and I can respond so much more effectively.
You know, I actually try that. I often do that, especially if it's a really important conversation or it's a website consultation and I genuinely need to hear what the pain points are for my clients, what they want, what they need, what they're trying to convey to their audience. And I will turn away from my desk and look out the window. And, you know, it's just, mm-hmm. I'm looking out the window. Mm-hmm. It's a very quiet neighborhood. There's nothing much going on out there. But it's very calming to me. It's very soothing. So I will literally just, I'm here. I'm in my chair, but I'm faced in another direction. So that's a point. I'm glad you shared that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just that whole, you know, sense of how can I be here for this person? I think an interesting question to ask yourself when you see that there's someone that needs to speak with you about something is, you know, how can I help convey to this person that they're the most important person in my life at this moment? How can I be fully present for them?
That is so important. And I think that's one of the biggest things that people miss. And, you know, we can blame multitasking. We can blame, oh, you know, I've got an idea I've got to fix, which, by the way, I know that men are unjustly accused of this. You know, their wife or their significant other or female counterpart just doesn't, we don't want you to fix it for you. We want you to listen to us. But I'm going to tell you right now, women do the same thing. So it's not fair to blame this on men.
Oh, no.
Not even close.
I think it's just one of those things. You know, another way to ask the question is, how can I be of service to this person? How can I be of help so that I'm not preoccupied with me getting to speak what I want to say as much as what is it I need to hear from them that will be helpful for me?
And that's exactly what it's all about, isn't it? You say in your book, and I'm reading some of the chapter in a nutshell, one of the things that I highlighted was effective listening begins with giving your undivided attention. That mm-hmm. is so critical. I cannot argue with you on that.
You know, another area that is so important with listening that we can get into is interrupting. You know, finishing another person's sentence or not being able to contain ourselves because we feel like the point we want to make is more important than the point they're trying to make. And when we do that, that is the height of rudeness, and it's the opposite of serving someone, right? It's because we want to get in there or we want to save time. You know, we might feel like, oh, they're just taking too long to get to the point. And so we interrupt them and think we know what they're going to say. And that is, it doesn't do anything to improve the relationship. In fact, it can hurt the relationship. And for people who are listening that may have that tendency to interrupt others, I want to share a tip that my other partner and I, Paula, and I adopted several years ago when Denny tended to interrupt us at different times. And we were committed to helping him improve. He acknowledged he wanted to improve. This wasn't something he wanted to do. It was just a habit that he had. So when we were having in-person conversations with him, if he was interrupting whoever it was that was speaking, we just held up our hand, you know, like you'd say, to stop doing something. And that gesture reminded him without us saying, quit interrupting me.
Right.
And it worked really well. And then when we were having phone conversations, because we don't all work in the same office, we would just say, I'm not finished yet, or please let me finish. With the tone that I just used, we didn't say, please let me finish. You know, we didn't have irritation in our voice. We were simply reminding him. And, you know, Denise, what's funny is we still use those kinds of cues with each other. Just last week, the three of us were having a Skype call, and I don't even remember which one of us. It wasn't Denny. It was either Paula and I started to say something, and Denny's the one that said, well, I wasn't finished yet. So, you know, we have learned over the years that just saying a simple statement is a way of reminding the person, you interrupted me, I'd like to finish. And that's huge, because where we get into problems, if somebody does, you know, jump in and say that to us, then our tendency is to get defensive or shut down or withdraw. And that doesn't do anything to keep the communication moving forward.
And it also causes you to lose your focus. You're so busy going, what the heck just happened? How do I stop this? Oh, what was I even talking about?
Yeah,
so
you lose
there's
kind
several
of thought. That's right.
Exactly. Several problems going on there. So, and when you're talking about holding your hand up, it's kind of like when I point to my dog. She knows to go sit in her bed. I don't have to talk to her. I don't have to say anything. Just go sit. And she goes. So I think we all have those verbal cues that we can either adapt on a Zoom call or, you know, when we're speaking with somebody. But you're right. They have to be said in a tone of voice that you're not being nasty. You're not being offended. You're just saying, hang on a second. Let me finish. That's not rude. It actually should be done much more than it's done, in my opinion.
Well, I think that's right, because, again, if people aren't honest with each other, then resentments build up, and you can get into this passive-aggressive situation where somebody blows up, and you don't know where it came from.
And you don't know how to get over it sometimes. I mean, sometimes when you dump something big in the middle of a room, everybody just kind of goes, okay, I'm going to leave now, and I'm going to take my ticked off face with me, and it takes a lot of time and energy to fix all that. So how about just don't do it?
Yes. And I think we also, you know, this calls for this emotional maturity. You know, we call it, you know, the emotional intelligence. But this idea of being able to listen from a neutral position where we don't get our emotions engaged and get into a reactionary mode that, again, doesn't facilitate the other person being able to say what it is they want to say. And it's so easy to fall into that. If we feel like we were the ones that were right, then we're more likely to jump in with a justification, rationale, as opposed to just really finding out what the other person's concerns are or, you know, where they're coming from. It's so easy to get our egos wrapped up in this.
It really is. And that's why listening, just shut up and listen, is sometimes one of the bigger skills you need to, you know, just look. I have a mute button on everything. I have a mute on my phones. I have a mute button on my headphones. I mute a lot because I don't want to just blurt something out. I'm a blurter. I tend to say what I think. I think I mentioned I have no filters, and I really don't. So I mute myself frequently. I have to. But that's something I had to learn.
Well, you know, what you're saying is, you know, we all can find ways to, I guess, deal with our tendencies in a way that facilitates connecting with others.
Exactly. Meredith, you said something earlier that I wanted to kind of go back and get you to, you know, give us give us maybe a little bit more information on, and that's how you said sometimes you have to help people think for themselves. In your book, you have a chapter called Coaching People to Think for Themselves. Can you give us some ideas, some skill sets there?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you the bottom line first in terms of a general principle is asking a question that is some version of, what do you think? So that you're removing yourself from being the problem solver, the solution provider, and you are asking questions. That's really the core, is looking at what can I ask this person that will help them come up with the answer, solve this problem, so they're not relying on me all the time to provide it. And there are a couple of things that work there, I think, Denise. If you're finding that people are coming to you a lot to ask, you have to evaluate how much of a risk am I encouraging people to take. You know, do they feel safe about making mistakes? Because if they're constantly coming to me, then that tells me they're not feeling like they have permission or they have the ability to think. So it helps to increase confidence in the other person when you ask questions that help them come up with their own solution and you know, take on resolving whatever the situation might be. So I just think that we can look for opportunities to, you know, observe someone, or if they come to us and say, what do you think I ought to do? Well, you know, what options do you see right now? So, again, it's that version of what do you think, so that, for one thing, it removes pressure from you as the listener to feel like, oh, they're coming to me with this problem. They're looking to me to solve it. When in fact, if you switch that around and say, oh, this is an opportunity for me to help them think this through. What questions could I ask that would help them consider, you know, what the alternatives might be and which choice might be the best for them in this particular situation?
See, this is brilliant. I have a client who, there are several members of her staff who spend an awful lot of time, in her opinion, knocking on her door to ask basically the same questions over and over again. It's driving her bonkers. It drives me bonkers just to hear her complain about it. And because I can feel her pain. I mean, it's cutting into her time. She has a very important job as the owner of these agencies. Some of these people have been with her for quite a long time. They should know better. And I don't know how to counsel her on this. I finally just said, maybe you should create a frequently asked questions binder. And every time, we're going to go back to Denny here. Anytime they come knocking on the door, she can just hold up her hand and point at the binder and say, go, figure it out on your own. That may not have been the best advice. So what would we tell her? And honestly, my opinion is that I think a lot of them are just lazy. I'll be very frank with you on that. They just don't want to do the work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think she could set in place a requirement for them before they come to her with a question. They need to come up with an answer themselves. And if they like their answer and they think it's a good one, then they don't need to talk to her at all. And if they still have a question, then in other words, they come up with the solution before they talk to her, so that all they're doing is presenting to her their idea for how to handle this situation and getting her to agree, is this, you know, are you okay with this or not? And whether it needs to be done in person or if they can drop, you know, an email or send a message, a text message, but something that would be quick. But I think the other thing she could do is simply ask them when they come to her with a question where she feels like they ought to know the answer or they already do know the answer, ask them, what is it about the situation that you feel you need to come and ask me about this? In other words, what have I done to communicate to you that it's not okay for you to solve this yourself? Because I think a lot of times people are afraid of making a mistake or being corrected, or so I think that's what she needs to explore with them. You know, what is it about what I've said or done in the past that makes you think you need to come to me with this question?
See, that's
so she's
brilliant.
She's taking responsibility for
right.
it and not trying to make them feel guilty for coming to her. But, you know, in other words, she needs to let them know, I want to help you think more independently, act more independently. What is it about my way of handling these situations that would make it easier for you to just act on this on your own?
See, that is perfect. But I will say there are a couple of them that are just bone lazy, and she's not going to be able to cure that, I don't think. She is weeding them out, so good for her.
I was just going to say, it sounds yeah. like they're not the best people on her team, if that's the case.
No,
and,
not.
You know, this kind of leads back or leads into, you know, how do you give constructive feedback to people if they are engaging in a behavior where you've addressed this, you know, previously, but nothing has changed, right? And so I think an important thing is to be able to, what we recommend in terms of giving constructive feedback is starting out with something positive about the person, because you don't want them to feel like you're jumping all over them. And so to be able to affirm something about them that you appreciate is important. But then to be able to describe very specifically, what is the behavior that is causing problems for you? And so in this case, you know, it might be, you know, Jane, you get this work done so well, and I appreciate it when you're able to, you know, work through an entire aspect of a project on your own. It seems lately, though, you've come to me 3 times this week asking questions that I feel you already have the answers to. And so what this does is it interrupts you from getting your task done, and it interrupts me from working on my priorities. And so then they need to, besides talking about the behavior, talking about the impact it has. And then to reset expectations and get agreement from the person. So here's what I would like to see you do in the future. I would like you to think this through, and if you feel you have the answer already, then I want you to move with it. And is this something you're willing to do? What do you need from me in order to effectively do that? Is there anything that's holding you back or causing problems that would get in the way of you being able to follow through with what I'm asking you to do? So you give that person the opportunity to say, yeah, but, you know, here's what I'm concerned about, or here's what I'm afraid of. And so you have a conversation about, well, how can we resolve that so that's not an issue for you? So then you've got this agreement before they leave, and you at the end also make a positive statement about, I'm here to support you. You know, I know this is something that you can do, and I'm looking forward to having you implement it. So that process doesn't have to take a lot of time. But what happens too often is the person, let's say, in this case, your client, you know, complains to you about it or someone else, or doesn't address it and then expects it to get better. And that's not going to happen.
No, it's not. And while you're talking, I kept in my little bubble head that lives above me, you always have these words pop up. I'm sure we all do. If we don't, I'm in the wrong world. But empathy kept popping up in one of those bubbles above my head, because if you're listening carefully and you're saying, okay, how can I help you? What's going on? Why are you asking, you know, the different things? You may, if you're listening with empathy, you may find out that they're going through a divorce that you knew nothing about, or their cat just died, or something just really pretty awful is happening in their lives and they don't want to talk about it and, you know, be the buzzkill in the coffee room. But you've got to be able to hear those things even if they're not being said. Am I way off base?
Or am I close?
Yes.
That's so important, Denise, because, you know, we work with people who are whole human beings, right? They're not just at work. They have lives, and all the different aspects of their lives are intertwined with everything they do. And I think that if you notice somebody has fallen short or made a mistake or, you know, done something that's out of character of how they usually are, to simply stop and take time to say, hey, what's going on? You don't seem like yourself, you know, or I noticed you did this happened, or you did that, or you said that. What's going on? That's not like you. And giving somebody permission to open up by asking a question like that is huge, because you're showing empathy, like you said. You're showing you really care about them as a human being. And that builds loyalty in a way that few other things do. When you sense that somebody you work with really is genuinely interested in how you're doing and cares and responds in a way that demonstrates, hey, I'm with you, that just is huge in terms of relationship building.
Very much so. And you know what else is a very important component of, you know, that empathy question or conversation? It's confidential. They should know that everything that is shared with you stops right there. It's not going to make it into an email. It's not going out to the water cooler. If you want to share, you can share. But whatever you shared with me is, it's like you're in the, what is it? And when you're Catholics, you're in the little booth, whatever it is.
Oh, the confessional.
Yes. I'm not a Catholic. I'm not very Catholic. But it's important for people to understand that they can talk with you. They can, you know, you can lead by empathy, but you also need to keep it to yourself. And I think that's a big, big problem with some people. They just can't stand not to gossip. Gossip is damaging. It's dangerous, and it will hurt you as much as it hurts the person that you betrayed.
Well, you're absolutely right, and it goes back to trust, which is a foundational element of a healthy relationship. If I don't feel I can trust you, I'm not going to be honest with you about much of anything, because I'll just say what I think you want to have me say, and so that's really critical in a work environment. If you really want people to perform at their best, there has to be trust. So a question for, you know, the listeners is, what am I doing to build trust with the people in my world versus what might I be saying or doing that tears down trust and makes it harder for us to all get our work done?
And do you have to sometimes ask why people don't trust you? This is part of communication. If you're in a leadership position and you're noticing that people really are not coming to you, they're just kind of going, hey, how are you doing? And skating on by. What are you doing wrong? Where do you need to stand up and say, I'm not doing a terrific job at this. Can you guys give me some feedback? And that feedback is probably going to make your heart hurt a bit. But unless you're willing to ask for that feedback, are you really mastering anything?
Well, no, and that is such an important point, and it kind of goes back to one of the things you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, how to receive feedback graciously, and a key element of that is to do just what you said, to ask, rather than waiting to have somebody come and tell you. Take the initiative to find out, and you don't, you know, you wouldn't go up to somebody and say, why don't you trust me? But you can say,
no,
you know, what is something that I'm doing that makes it hard for you to level with me and, you know, be honest with me? What's happened? So that you can really get the information. And sometimes it takes, you know, two or three conversations for somebody to really open up, or it can take a little bit more time in a given conversation. And a huge piece of what people will say is if you listen without getting defensive. So that's like a second step. So you ask, but then you make a commitment to yourself, I'm going to keep an open mind and hear what they have to say because I can learn from this. And so if you're not crossing your arms, you know, in person or even on a video call, if they can see that you're keenly interested in what they have to say, you're not interrupting, you're not justifying or explaining, and instead you acknowledge after you hear them say something, you can say something as simple as, oh gosh, I can see how you see things that way or interpreted my words that way. That makes perfect sense to me. If I were in your shoes, I would probably have experienced it just the way you described, and be willing to apologize, even if you didn't intend to, you know, create the difficulty for them, just being willing to say, I am so sorry, that was never my intent, and I don't want you to continue feeling hurt or upset over that. And that willingness to apologize is huge, because too many folks feel like if I apologize, then they are going to think less of me and I will be less powerful. And when in fact the opposite is true, because people know we're not perfect, you know, nobody's perfect. And they
know hang on
flaws.
Now, I'm perfect. I'm not asking for feedback. That was a statement. I'm perfect.
Yeah, so, but it's amazing how people are reluctant to say, I'm sorry, or I apologize, and then to actually thank them for giving you that feedback. That is huge for getting people to come back to you and open up if you do something else in the future that creates problems for them, because you didn't jump out at them. You know, you didn't shout, you didn't react defensively, you didn't try to justify and explain. You accepted it. You were humble, in other words. And it is, and I don't think of humble as being groveling at all. I think of it as recognizing I have my strengths and I also have opportunities to learn. I'm not going to handle every situation perfectly. So when people are willing to share their perceptions with me, I have the opportunity to see how could I handle this differently in the future.
So and I have to ask, oh, I'm sorry, keep going.
No,
sorry.
I was just going to say you can thank them for coming to you and then make the commitment for what you'll do in the future. And then follow through with it and ask for input down the road to see, am I improving or not? Are you seeing any difference?
That, I love that, and thank you for sharing that. I just had somebody ask me this, and it's a big one. We've all had to work with people that we just couldn't stand for whatever reason. We hated them from their hairline down to their shoes. We just couldn't stand them. Now what?
That's a good one, because as I was listening to that, I immediately thought of some past coworkers that I had issues with.
I can see him right now.
Yeah, I like to think that I've grown over the years. And so one of the things that I've learned is that my attitude towards that person is my own beliefs about them. And what I'm believing about them may not be true. I can question my beliefs, and I can visualize a better opportunity to have a better relationship with this person. Because honestly, because of the way we perceive a certain individual, we can trigger reactions from them because they read us. And so if we can adopt a different attitude about someone and not write them off as totally irredeemable, because we all have strengths, we all have positive qualities, and ask ourselves, what could I see in this person that could be a strength or a positive aspect that I can appreciate? Dan Sullivan is a coach to lots of entrepreneurs. And one of the things he said that he did that I think is really valuable is, before you have a conversation with someone, make a list of the things about that person that can be appreciated. Whether you have had that feeling at the moment of appreciating them, there are things that somebody values in them, even if you don't at this moment. And what are those things? And, you know, writing them down before you interact with them just brings that to mind. So you've got that as your focus before you have a conversation with them. And I did this one time with a guy that was really bugging me, and I thought, I've just got to give him some feedback. And I slept on it before I said anything. And the next day, I made a list of the things that I actually did appreciate about him. And there were a lot. And so I ended up sharing some of those with him when we talked. So instead of, you know, criticizing him, I acknowledged things about him to his face that I appreciated. And he was really surprised by it, because I think he had sensed my irritation in the past, and that had kind of put him on guard about interacting with me. So my bottom line advice is, take personal responsibility for your own beliefs and attitudes towards someone else, because they can change. Your attitudes and beliefs can change.
That is true, but I still can't stand this guy. And it was 20 years ago. I still can't stand him.
Well, and there are
and I'm
people,
not going to
you know,
change.
That we do have to, yeah, we have to sometimes just say goodbye to people in our lives that aren't healthy for us, because there are toxic people.
Oh, yeah.
But we need to recognize, you know, the combination, too, of what do we need to do to take care of ourselves if, in fact, this person really is not good for my mental health.
Well, I did realize early on that hitting him with my car was probably not going to be beneficial to me. I didn't care what it did to him, but I didn't want to go to jail. So there's that. So, Meredith, you have to be careful. We've got about 2 minutes left. Is there anything else you wanted to share with our audience before I let you go?
You know, one thing would just be another skill that we talk about in the book that very few people have learned how to do, because we don't teach it, is how to encourage someone. And we often think that, you know, giving them advice or trying to say that's not so bad or minimizing it is helpful, and it really isn't. When someone is discouraged, one of the best things you can do is first listen and then remind them of their strengths and how they've handled difficulties in the past, and offer a perspective, acknowledge the downsides, but also recognize and bring out some of the positives there. And then simply ask them, how can I best support you right now? So that you find out what you can do to really be there for them when they're feeling down. That's the one other skill that I would say I'd like to put in a few words about.
Thank you. Meredith, where can people find you?
Our website is growstrongleaders.com, and so we have information there about our books and products, and I'm on LinkedIn as well as Facebook and Twitter, but LinkedIn is my favorite social media platform, and I would encourage people to connect with me there.
Excellent. Meredith, thank you so much for coming back on the show with me. It's been, as always, wonderful speaking with you, and I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and actionable advice that you've given and shared with our audience. I really appreciate it.
One final thing I'd like to share is we have a free ebook about becoming a better listener that people can get at growstrongleaders.com/free, F-R-E-E.
Oh, terrific. Okay, so before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes and really anywhere else you consume your business podcast. I am also now in Amazon Prime Music. Who knew? So just look for your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Meredith, again, thank you so much.
Thanks, Denise.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.